Hi, everyone. Here's my disclaimer. The views that you hear discussed by the guests in this interview may not represent those of the station or the host. Always talk to your primary care physician about any medical advice. Hi, everyone. This is Betsy Wurzel, your host of Chatting with Betsy on Passionate World Talk Radio, where our mantra is to educate, enlighten, and entertain. Folks, I'm so excited about my guest today, as I'm excited all the time about my guest. And yes, I really do get excited about my guest. With me today is the first time I'm interviewing a psychic medium. My guest is Lisa Najjar. She is a speaker. She is a teacher. She is a writer. She is an author. She is an international psychic medium who wrote the book, Dying to Tell You, Channeled Messages from the Famously Dead, which include Albert Einstein, George Harrison, Shirley Temple, I love Shirley Temple, and Marilyn Monroe were just a few of the celebrities that came to visit Lisa Najjar. So I can't wait to hear what Lisa has to say. Welcome, Lisa Najjar, to Chatting with Betsy.
Hi, Betsy. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome, and my pleasure. I cannot wait to ask you. I do. I get so excited with all my guests. What motivated you to write this book? I know the celebrities had come to you. And why did they choose you to write what they had to say?
Well, yes. I have to tell you what motivated me to write the book, really nothing. It was that they continued to come to me. In fact, Walt came to me 3 years before I did write it, and he asked me to write it, and I unequivocally said no. I said, no, I have no interest in this. I said, I don't know why you're coming to me. I am not a writer. And he said, you don't have to write. You were a court reporter, right? And I said, yes. And he said, well, that's all we expect. We don't want you writing the book. You're taking dictation for us. And I said, well, okay, that's easier, but I still am not interested. Then they did keep hounding me. And finally, on Good Friday of 2015, George Harrison, Abe Lincoln, and Walt Disney came to me, the three of them, and said, will you please do the book now? Your son is in university. You have nothing, you know, not a lot else going on, and you're not as preoccupied now. And I said, okay. So they coerced me, really, is what it is. And, and the question of why they came to me, I asked that once, and they said, because you're not the least bit interested in celebrity anything. And so you're unusual in that sense. You don't want to know anything. You don't follow the tabloids. You don't know who's dead or alive. You don't care about it. You know, celebrities could walk in the room right now where you were and you wouldn't phase. You wouldn't even glance. Like, you're just not interested. And we want someone like that, that couldn't care less about the fame and fortune of the people that they're channeling. And so you would be, you know, your ego's out of it, in other words. And I said, yes, it is, because I could care less about that whole sort of scene. And so that's why.
Wow, that's really cool. You must have been shocked. Were you shocked that they came to you and wanted you to write what they had to say?
Well, yeah, I was, Betsy, because, like I said to them, you know, I'm not a writer, so why would you? But they said, but you have the skill we need, which is dictation. I mean, I was a court reporter in the court, the Supreme Court in Canada for, you know, decades. And so that's the skill they wanted, actually. And, of course, they had to have someone that was a medium that could you know, tune into that vibration. So it was a big shock. But I always like to say, oh, they actually told me to remember the word unbidden. They said it's an important word, unbidden. And I said, oh, so uncalled. I did not call them. I did not ask for this. And they wanted me to remember that word, that they came to me unbidden. I did not want it. And so I guess to them it was an important thing. But here I am.
Oh.
I'm really glad I did it in the end. But I fought tooth and nail about it. I argued back and forth with them quite a bit.
Wow, that sounds so cool. I have to ask this. Did Albert Einstein say anything, like any regret about his, what he had to do with forming the atom bomb?
No, they didn't. This is the thing. They purposely, I noticed, stayed away from anything too sensational because, see, the thing is, now that they're on the other side, they realized that none of that actually mattered. It just didn't matter. But I'll tell you what they were regretful about, especially, well, somebody like Einstein. What he said that was the most regretful is that he thought he was really something special because the world made him feel so special. And all of a sudden he dies and he realizes I'm not any more special than anyone else. And so he had to realize something, you know, really profound like that, that we are all equal. We're all loved and perfect in the eyes of God anyways. And it's those kinds of things. And like Elvis, he is extremely regretful that with all his fame and fortune and influence that he had, he didn't do more with it because now that he's on the other side, he is watching how one act of kindness reverberates throughout all of time and space. And he said, had I known that while I was on the earth and with my influence, my sphere of influence, I could have moved the world to do many, many great things. But instead, I sort of frittered away my time on other things. And he says, boy, if I could only go back in time and what I would have done, but little did I know. So it was things like that that they know, that they've learned. And it didn't seem that they were all that interested in what we are. Like the earthly things, like, you know, the who killed Marilyn Monroe type of a thing. That type of thing, they didn't, it's like it didn't matter anymore the moment they crossed over, even though
Yeah, that's a good point, Lisa, because, you know, people on earth get wrapped up in the money and fame and, you know, acquiring their wealth and things, and you can't take that with you. So it stays behind. And I always believe that, you know, love will always be with them, and that, you know, they'll find out on the other side that what really mattered was spending time with their family and helping their humankind.
Yes, exactly. And that's what they, and that's why in the book, each chapter is devoted to a lesson like that. I mean, it's not titled that, but you can see the theme throughout that, you know, one of them will talk about time and the value and the lack of value that time has. One will talk, Paul Newman spoke extensively about love and the love bond and how that just doesn't die. And so he spoke about that. Walt Disney talked about children on the other side and spoke to parents about what he wanted to say to them who have newly lost children. You know, one of the worst tragedies ever for a parent is to lose a child. And so he spoke to the parents about the children. And so there was always this sort of lesson about it, but what's important. Jane Mansfield discussed body image, which is so relevant to today. In fact, I kind of think all of the chapters are more relevant today than even in 2015, although certainly then too. But they're getting more and more relevant the more, you know, the longer we go into this earth game, because we're getting so caught up, some of us, in the here and now, like as if this is the only reality. And it absolutely is not. And so I think each lesson is about what's important. And really, that was the whole premise of the book, is what they told me is that on the earth, they individually had all the money, the power, the influence, the you know, the love, the men, the women, all of it, every excess imaginable, all of the fame, everything. And yet they didn't have the one thing that mattered, which is what they learned when they crossed over. I mean, these were power people, Abe Lincoln and Martin Luther King and famous celebrities and whatnot. They had everything on this earth except the things that they learned when they crossed over. And those, they said, were the most important. And they said, the reason we're coming to give you this book, while the principles are simple, it's because people have really lost sight of why they're even on this earth. And we, who have just lived it, can tell them what we've learned and all that stuff we went for and actually succeeded in acquiring meant nothing. And what really mattered were the things they didn't even know about that they now know. And they want to help us make better choices while we're on the earth in these bodies, because we're not dead yet and we still can change our ways. And so I think that's what their hope was for the book.
Wow, that is so, that's just giving me goosebumps here in New Jersey. Because it's so true that, you know, we just think of, you know, the here and now, and yes, we should live in the moment. I would say live in the moment, but have your eye in the future. But what are we doing? This is what I say, Lisa. What are we doing to help our fellow man or woman? How are we making this world a better place? Because no one on their deathbed has said, I wish I spent more time at the office. I wish I brought more things. They wish they had more time with their family and to do more to help their fellow brother or sister. I mean, that's how I feel.
Yes, no, go ahead. Exactly. And actually, just last year, I think, I'm trying to think. I get so many channeled messages from the Ascended Masters with Christ and Mother Mary and different ones. And Jesus said to me, and it was the end of I was teaching a moon meditation or one of my classes. And at the end of one of my moon classes, Jesus came and gave us a message. And he said something to the effect of, the most important thing, he said, basically, there's a lot going on in the world. He said a little more specific than that. But he said there's a really lot going on, and people are really losing their way here on Earth. They're really losing their way, and they're really turning away from what's important. And he said that the best thing would be to spend your time going forward helping your brother and sister, you know, helping lift their load. And that people need to be doing that. They need to, just exactly what he taught when he was here, you know, help others and be kind. And also he said forgiveness. Two Easters in a row, Jesus has come to me and given me a message about forgiveness. Actually three Easter Sundays in a row. But this year, for some reason, he didn't talk so much about forgiveness, but the two before that, he did. They were specifically on forgiveness. And he said one of the hardest things to do is to forgive, but one of the most necessary to go into what I'll call the new earth is forgiveness. So forgiveness, 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 he said, we must. And so he's pushed me to teach that to the world, is how important, and he gave reasons why it was so important, a few of them, actually. And so as hard as it is, that's something we have to focus on. So loving our neighbor, helping our neighbor, forgiving that which we need to, those types of things are more important than acquiring the next gold, you know, brass ring or whatever it is. Very much more important. So,
yes.
Yeah,
I have to share something with you, Lisa, because I know you would understand. And also, like, self-forgiveness. My husband died January 1st, 2020. He had early onset Alzheimer's. And really for a year, I felt unjustified guilt that I picked out the wrong hospice and that I felt so guilty because I thought I aided in his death. And it was on that anniversary, I felt him say to me, Betsy, I'm not suffering. I'm not thinking of that. Let it go and do what you're supposed to do. Don't waste your energy on feeling guilty of something that's not your fault. I know you fought for me. And I felt such a release, Lisa, from that message. And I, you know, share that with people. Some people might think I'm a little woo-woo, but that's okay.
Well, no, but Betsy, because I'm a medium and a psychic, half of the clients that I work with I bring in their loved ones. And almost in, probably 100%, if not 99.999999999 times, the loved ones come and they don't remember or think about any of it. Not whether you were there to say goodbye, not whether you pulled the plug because you were responsible, not whether you were this or that or you had a fight before, none of those things. And it's incredible to see how light and free they are. They don't care about any of the stuff from the earth. And all they're focused on is the good you did. All they're not seeing any of the negative. There's no such thing as them sort of forgiving us. If anything, they will ask forgiveness for something that maybe they feel they have done maybe that's not quite right. And the reason being is that they have just come out of a life review. And see, so everybody who dies goes through a life review where you get to see what you've done, what you said, and what you thought, not only from your perspective, but then they turn it around and they make sure that you get to see what your actions, words, and thoughts have done to the person. You become the person that you did it to, said it about, or thought it about. It's kind of like profound when you think about it, that every person you even thought a bad thought of, you get to be them and see what that thought, because apparently those thoughts that we think about others, which, listen, we all do. We're all human. We all do think judgy thoughts or criticism thoughts or just snarky sometimes or angry thoughts, whatever. Those thoughts, apparently they're like daggers going into somebody. And God gives us that, I guess, grace to be able to look very objectively at those things and see how it felt to the other person when that dagger was sent to them, whether by a word, a thought, or a action. And so it's not as a punishment. I always like to say if there's anything such as hell on the other side, it's that we have to live with what we have done. And even little things, we have to live with how it hurt others. But they do it so that we can assess and say, all right, look, I missed the mark there. You know, next time I'm going to try a bit better, to be a bit better and maybe course correct. And that's what the whole plan is. And so when our loved ones go through that doorway and they have that life review, they see all the places they let us down. And they then want to say something to us like, listen, like just yesterday, the client I had, I said, your mom is here, and she wants to say, don't think I don't know how when I was doing blank, 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 it hurt you. I didn't see it when I was on earth, but now I'm past, and I've seen my life review, and I saw how that hurt you. And I now want you to know, I know what you felt like, and I'm so sorry for that. I tried so hard to be a good mother, and I see I missed a mark. So it's things like that. They care more about that they don't care what we've done to them, because they see deep in our hearts we didn't mean to hurt them. So it's kind of, you're right, it's like a weight. It's just taken off of our shoulders when we feel that, oh, heavens, don't worry, we're fine. It's like you can go on and be, you know, be happy again, because the deceased, if nothing else, wants us to be happy. Gosh, they want us to be happy. And when we're not, it keeps them more anchored to the earth. They can't fly freer, like as free, if they think we're sad and we can't let them go.
Yes. I just, you know, felt so much better. Like, I feel Nat's presence really still with me. A lot of strange things have happened. And someone said to me, Betsy, you talk about Matt, like, he's still here. And I said, well, to me, he is. I mean, I had some weird things happen. And Matt has sent me signs, and I just know that he is with me, and I know that he's happy, and that makes me happy. And I did promise Matt when he was dying that I was going to continue on with my work, and one of the things I do is chatting with Betsy, and that's to help other people, to let people know they're not alone, to provide resources to help them have a better life. This is all, Matt was my catalyst and always will be. And so I just know that he's smiling down and is he's proud of me. And
oh, yeah.
You know, I miss him. And I talked to him, Lisa. I talked to Matt like he's still here.
That's
I do.
Because he is here. Oh, yes, they watch over us. And they absolutely, and this is what one of them, I think Paul Newman said in the book, is don't ever think they're far away. They hear every time you speak to them in your mind or out loud, they hear you. Every time. Every time. So when and they also, they said they're almost closer to you now than they were when they were on Earth, because on Earth maybe they only had you, let's say it's you're an adult and it's your parent. You maybe only saw them once every couple of weeks for dinner or even every weekend. But here now they can see your heart every day. They're with you every day. Yes, you can't reach out and speak to them or hold their hand, but they're actually walking with you. They're as I think Paul Newman. We're just a breath away. I mean, so you just think a thought. And it's not that they invade your thoughts. It's when you're thinking of them, they absolutely hear you. They absolutely do. And they'll do anything in their power to leave you signs or to come to you in the dream state, which is really easy for them because they come down from, say, the 11th dimension down to the 4th, which is the astral, which is where we are when we're dreaming. We're already in the 4th because we're dreaming, and they can easily meet us there. And so the dreams that one has when we are asleep about our loved ones aren't dreams. They're actual visits with them because they come to the waiting room, the 4th. The 4th has a waiting room, and they'll come down to talk to us in our dreams. And when we have these dreams that, oh, wow, I woke up and I felt like my mom was right there, well, she was. You actually spent some time with her because that's a lot easier for her than to come to the 3rd. To come to the 3rd dimension is a little more challenging, but clearly they do it as evidenced by little signs they leave us and all the rest of it. So they can do it. But some deceased prefer the 4th where it's much easier to go to, and they meet us there in the dream state. So don't discount any of the messages you've had or anything like that. It's for real. It's them. And they are so pleased when we recognize that, hey, that's my mom or my Matt or my sister or whatever. And we say, hi, I love you. Or we maybe a simple thing I teach in my classes is to put out flowers, you know, maybe buy flowers once in a while and say, you know, this is for you, mom. And they are looking at those flowers and they're just beaming. But the thing that makes them beam more than anything is to see us happy. When you're out there looking at a sunset and you're just, oh, you're just like, your heart is just full of love, they're flying. Like, their heart is just immense. So every time you are happy, Matt is happier. And so it's so important. And I'm not saying, you know, just kind of push away our grief either, because we can't do that. But so definitely feel the feelings and go through the process of grief. But every moment that you do, a lot of people have a guilt feeling when they feel really happy after someone dies. And they would say to you, no, every time you have a beautiful, happy feeling, we're celebrating with you and it makes us twice as happy. So do it for them, if not even for yourself, to have those moments of joy, even while you're grieving, you know.
Wow, Lisa, I'm feeling like verklempt here because I ask Matt every night to come to me in my dreams, and he does. Matt comes to me every night in my dream. And I actually have tears coming from my face that you mentioned that. And it's and I do celebrate, like, Matt's birthday. We get a cake. And we sing to him happy birthday. We celebrate his life. Father's Day, you know, we celebrate. And I do believe they want us to be happy. And I've learned I can mix my happy with my sad. Yes, I'll always love and miss Matt. And yes, my heart will always have this pain of loss. But I could also be happy. And Matt would want me to be happy. And that is so...
He wants nothing more than that.
Important. Wow, it is so interesting. I have to tell you about a dream. I'm telling about people, you know, coming to you in your dream. This is, I know you would understand this because you know where I'm coming from. My brother died in 2021. He came to me like, I think a week or two after he died, dressed as a mailman, and gave me a letter. A week or two after that, Lisa, my other brother called me to tell me that my son will be getting something in the mail from it's Browley's estate. How bizarre was that?
Oh, isn't that?
He was sending me a message, Browley.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, see, and if I mean, there you go. That's beautiful. That's perfect with what I just said about the dreams. That's their favorite place to come to us because it's so easy. And look, you're getting visitations because your husband and your brother, they want you to know, hey, we're okay and we're not very far from you. We're not. We're just a thought away. So, and they want nothing more than you to be happy. Nothing more. Nothing.
I have to ask you, because I love Shirley Temple. I just loved her movies. I think she was a wonderful person. What did she have to tell you?
I loved her, too. And she was one of my favorite actresses. And, boy, I was addicted to her movies. And
me, too.
She was very sweet. She was very sweet. And, you know, she talked about children and about being, you know, letting them grow up and not, you know, because she was so controlled as a child. And so it was more about that. I think she was reminiscing about her life and her life choices and lack thereof, because she didn't have a lot of choices. She was put upon by people all through her life. And so I think that she was really proud of herself that she did not raise her children to be like that, she said. She said, I learned from what happened to me that I wouldn't do that to my own. And so she was pretty proud of the way that she was and the way she moved through life. So that was, it was more just a little bit of a, like it's like two friends having coffee type of a message to me, actually. It was sort of sweet. So nothing too profound. I think she was just reviewing her own life and pretty happy with the choices she made, actually.
I just thought she was a great person, did a lot. For people, very kind a person is what I perceived her as, and doing all the work that she did. And she remained very, I feel, down to earth, being a child star. She was very grounded. And of course, I'm curious about George Harrison, because I grew up listening to the Beatles and watching them.
George was one of my favorites, and not only during the book, but he has since gone on to come to me, and Deva Pramal, I'm not sure if you're familiar with her music, she does chant music, and Deva and I, for some reason, we get a lot of, I always laugh when I say, Deva, every time I'm with you, I tend to get world messages. Like in December 2019, Shiva came to me and told me all about what was going to happen in 2020, so I get all these world prediction messages from when I'm with Deva. It's kind of crazy, but George Harrison also comes to me a lot with her and sometimes without her. So he's given me a lot of messages about just going forward in this life and what's happening and all that. But he's one of my favorites. And when he came in the book, he was job shadowing Jesus. I mean, I just thought that was incredible. He was job shadowing Jesus, literally. And he is, because he kept coming in with Jesus. The two of them would come in together. And they would always look the same in these sort of like glowing sort of white robes, which the other people didn't have when they came to me. So I thought that was really interesting. And I said, why do I always confuse you with Jesus? And he showed me that Jesus was right with him. So I feel like in the next world, or should there be another time that he comes to the earth, he's going to be more of a, in the role of more of a master, or a, I don't know what the levels would be, but apprentice master, I really don't know. But he's definitely on a spiritual quest. And his lesson, or his talk to me, for us, was more about just love and forgiveness and things like that. Like the things you'd hear Jesus say, really. A lot of them. So it was kind of interesting. When I brought in John Lennon, I noticed that was a little bit different. John still had a little bit of a chip on his shoulder kind of a thing. He was kind of bitter, and there were some parts that I didn't put in the book that he told me. I felt they were too controversial, and at the time, I was so not in the world. I was really just kind of keeping to myself, and so I was kind of nervous to put in some of what John Lennon said. But he did talk more about corporations and about control and about all these things that these people were doing, and I thought, wait, I can't put all that in. I said, John, that's going to have to go in the next book because I'm not putting that in. And he was fine with it, but he just wanted to vent the world and all of what was going on and how we were being manipulated and all of this on the earth, which at the time I knew nothing about. I was so naive about the goings-on of the world. And so I couldn't wrap my head around it, but he seemed to be a bit bitter. He had some good things to say, too, but I don't think he was real happy with the way he lived his life, to be honest. Whereas George was more content with the way he was in life, generally. So yeah, it was kind of neat just feeling into their energy, each one being so different from the one before.
Well, that is interesting. I know that George Harrison, to me, it looked like he had a happier life, where John had a harder life. Didn't his mom leave him with his grandmother when he was young?
Yeah, I think something like that. You know, it's funny.
Yeah.
Before the book, I didn't know any of their stories. I didn't know that Paul Newman was dead. So when he came to me, I remember, this is kind of silly, but I remember channeling his message and at the end of it saying, Paul, listen, I'm not wishing you dead, but you better be dead because I'm going to now Google you to find out because I don't even know if you're actually dead. And if I'm talking to you and you're not, this will be really weird. And I'm not sure if your wife is alive. I don't know. I don't follow celebrities. I don't know who's dead and who's alive. And so I had to do that with some of them. In fact, the one that really shocked me, I mean, really shocked me, was Davy Jones from the Monkees. And so
oh, I loved him.
I'm old enough to remember him, of course. And so the funny thing is about 5 years earlier, I had been with my friend. She was a comedian. So here in Calgary, Canada, which I'm visiting right now, but Calgary, Canada, we were at a comedy night with her. And there's a little lounge beside it. And I couldn't believe it, but Davy Jones and the Monkees, they did a little revival band. And they were at the little bar beside us. So we ended up talking to them. And somebody took a picture of me, and it's in the book. But they took a picture of me sitting at the bar talking to Davy. And at the moment that they took that picture, very strangely, we were debating whether there was life after death. And Davy said to me, no, Lisa, in his beautiful English accent, when you're dead, you're dead. And I said, no, Davy, you're wrong. I'm going to schedule a past life regression with you, and you're going to find out you're not dead when you're dead. And we were arguing back and forth about what happens after death. Well, anyways, fast forward a number of years, and I couldn't believe it in the middle of my book. Here comes Davy Jones. And I went, no, you're not dead. I met you just 5 years ago. Like, there's no way you're dead. And he laughed and he laughed. He goes, Lisa, I've never been so happy to be wrong. Because, of course, he realized when you're dead, you're not dead. And here he was talking to me, dead. And so he just thought that was the biggest, you know, chuckle. He was laughing so much about it and saying, wow, am I ever glad you were right. So we had such a fun time about that. He was probably the happiest of all of them. They were all pretty happy, fairly happy, but Davy was just full of life and laughter, really, he was. So that was cute.
Oh, wow. I had such a crush on him. I used to get the bubble gum cards, you know, the monkeys, and he was my favorite. He was my favorite monkey, and I wanted them so bad to come to my town. You know, he was just, and he died suddenly of a heart attack. I forgot when, but.
I was shocked.
Yeah, I was, and he was young, too. Marilyn Monroe. Yeah, he was young. I have to ask you about Marilyn Monroe, because to me, she was a very beautiful person. A lot of problems, a lot of, you know, inner demons that she had to work through, and I kind of felt bad for her because, like, she was abused by men. so much, you know, in her life. And, you know, back in the, I'm going to be 65, so back in the 60s, you know, Marilyn Monroe was like the perfect figure. Oh, I want to be a 10 like Marilyn Monroe, the size 10. Now that would be considered overweight, right? Now, but I just think that she was, I felt bad for her, really. She was mistreated by men and abused. And what did she have to, if you could share what she had to say to you about, you know, she mentioned anything about body image and
yeah,
whatever.
No, she didn't. The body image was Jane Mansfield talked extensively about that. Marilyn, she, interestingly, she was just, you know, she's still resting. So when I do my reading, sometimes if a parent or a loved one is still resting, I'll say, well, you know, sometimes they do rest for a while, and I bring up Marilyn Monroe, because Marilyn is literally still resting. After all these years, she's still doing that. And she said she's exhausted from her earth life. She is absolutely exhausted. She was put to the ringer. She never got to be herself. She never got to be a child. She misses that she didn't have a real true childhood. And she also misses that she didn't have children. More than anything else, she was lamenting that. And so she was mostly talking about her, some of her sadnesses and the things that she missed out on in life more than anything else, and how simple she wished she would have lived, because she said, you know, life should have been a lot more simple and that children should just be able to be children and not pushed around and everything like she was. And so I think it was more just her sharing and processing some of her life with me. And so it really felt like two girls just sitting and having a coffee together. That's what it felt like.
Well, Jay Mansfield was very beautiful too and had quite a figure, which now by Hollywood standards, they probably would tell her to go on a diet, but she was, you know, I love the old Hollywood because women were allowed to have a shape then. And they were, you know, they had a figure. They were considered voluptuous. Her, Jane Russell, Esther Williams, I think it was Esther with the swimmer. They just, you know, were like normal shaped women. And they need to get, back to that. But then Twiggy came on the scene and, you know, then it was, everyone wanted to be like Twiggy, a twig. Thin, very thin.
Totally.
And because I grew up in the 60s. So I remember when Twiggy came on the scene. And I just, this book sounds so interesting and very enlightening and enjoyable. Thank you for sharing it. Where can people buy your book, Lisa?
Yeah, thank you. Everywhere. Well, it's on Amazon. It's Dying to Tell You, Channeled Messages from the Famously Dead. So it's on Amazon. And also the audiobook for those that want that. That is not, that's on Amazon is the paperback and the Kindle. And then if you want the audio, I had somebody do it for me. She is so interesting because while she was recording it, I said to her name is Sarah, and I said, Sarah, you're channeling them because I can hear them speak to me through you. And also you have their vibration. It's like she just channeled their vibration. So she did a beautiful job doing the audiobook, and that's on my website. So probably the easiest way is lisanajjar.com. Lisa Najjar, LisaNajjar, lisanajjar.com. And on there, you will find my audiobook and I think links to the Amazon anyways. And then also anything else, I teach a lot of classes and on forgiveness and channeled messages, and I teach an intuitive increase your intuitive IQ class, and where I teach people how to increase their intuitive IQ, right? Because we use it for everything.
Yes, yes, that sounds interesting. And you also on your website, because I had looked, you do people can hire you for readings.
Absolutely. Yes, I do. I do readings. I do, of course, mediumship. I do all the usual psychic, you know, love, career, money, etc. The other thing I do that I think is really helpful, and I call it soul healing, is if people can't reach success, or whether it be in love or money, career, they just find themselves getting to a certain point and then blocking themselves, or a certain point in their health and they're blocking, or they keep meeting the same type of people, the same patterns, same dynamics with the men or women that they're meeting, or relationships with their family, just keep banging heads with family members. That there's a reason for that. And I am so good. One of my best gifts is to tune in and track back through your lifetime where these patterns got set up, and so why you're blocking good health or good success or good love relationship, or why, what kind of karma do you have with certain relatives or certain friends that you just can't, you know, get past. And I track back where that all came from and how to clear it. Because here's the thing, if we don't clear what's in the way, you know, we can't manifest the new. People always say, oh, just, you know, create your own reality and manifest because you state it and you know, say affirmations. That's all well and good. But as Spirit taught me, if there's no blocks between you and the thing you're manifesting, you should have it in 3 days. If you don't have it in 3 days, you have a block there. And you need to find out what the block is, and you need to heal that block. So the block is our limiting beliefs and patterns that we brought over, like files from past lives. We literally bring files from our past lives. We bring them forward into this life. Our fears, our old beliefs, you know, erroneous thinking, like I'm afraid of love, or love hurts, or, you know, men are dangerous, or I'm unsafe, or beliefs like that. They come into this life, and we don't even know why we feel it. And so we just keep choosing the same situations and hitting that same brick wall. So I really love untangling those knots for people. And I call that more or less soul healing, because it is. And then once that's cleared, well, then our life actually changes. So that's some of the work I do anyways.
Well, that sounds interesting. Yes, I've heard that. And are you also a matchmaker?
I have done some good matchmaking. Yes, I have. Now, often when I'm looking into people, so if let's say somebody's single and they're on one of these dating sites and they've got, as I don't know if you've ever been, but I know I have briefly, and, you know, you get these coffee dates and you have all these different coffees you're going to go. I can literally, with somebody's name, first name, I don't need a picture or anything. I want to hear their first name, and I will tune into them and find out which ones are worth bothering to have lunch with, because I can see, oh, no, you've got karma with them, or, oh, no, they're an alcoholic. Oh, you want to stay away from them. So I do that. That's kind of fun. And then in some rare cases, I'm not going to say I do it often because I haven't done it often, I've actually match made. Like, I just see somebody and I say, no, that's your person. You've got to meet that person. That's your person. And I've had some great success with that. But again, it's not sort of typical. What I'm more typically known for is being able to assess people you're interested in and see where the trouble spots might be, where the blind spots might be, and what the compatibilities are and what the karma is from past lives. So you know if it's going to be a smooth ride or a bumpy ride. And so it can help you to, you know, cut down on some time, some of those coffee dates you might want to, you know, say goodbye to. And, it's kind of fun. Those are my fun little sessions I do with people.
Well, that sounds like fun. Well, thank you so much, Lisa Najjar, for coming on, spending time with me on Chatting with Betsy today, and wish you much success. Folks, Lisa Najjar is author of Dying to Tell You, Channeled Messages from the Famously Dead. So make sure to check out that book. Go on Amazon.com. It is holiday time. Maybe friends may be interested in a book like this. It sounds fascinating, actually. Like a fascinating read, and a kind of a fun book to read. So think about that as a gift idea. And all the information about Lisa Najjar will be in the blog, so please read the blog. I want to thank Jeannie White, the station manager, Passion World Talk Radio, who writes the blog and produces the show. And I want to thank Lillian Caldwell, who's CEO of Passion World Talk Radio, makes this all possible. And I want to thank you, the audience, for listening. Please share the show to help other people. And thank you for subscribing. It is free to subscribe to Chatting with Betsy. I'm on Amazon Music. I'm on Spreaker, iHeart, Spotify. And I would really appreciate it, because when you share this podcast, a show, and then you are helping me carrying out my mission and my vision, which I promised Matt that I would carry on with my work. And you are honoring that Matt's memory when you do that. So I really appreciate that. And I just love doing what I do. Can't believe November's at the end. So I want to wish everyone a happy, safe holiday season. Can't be happy, then I hope you have a peaceful one. And as I always say at the end of my show, in a world where you can be anything, please be kind and shine your light bright, because if we were all kind and shined our light bright, this would be a much better, peaceful, kinder, brighter world, and we could all sure use it. This is Betsy Wurzel, your host of Chatting with Betsy on Passionate World Talk Radio. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye now.